Welcome to Couch Sessions by YWAM Heidebeek. On this podcast, we sit down with YWAMers to have interesting and challenging conversations on their journey with Holy Spirit and how they live their day-to-day lives with God. So come, join us. This episode is hosted by Carl Shaw.
So today I'm sitting here with Romke Fountain. Romke is a pioneer by heart, and in 1973, or set up Youth for a Mission here in the Netherlands. There are so many stories that she could share with you, and I hope that here through this podcast you're going to get some inspiration. You're going to enjoy listening to her, and over the number of years that I've been with YWAM in the Netherlands, I've really enjoyed listening to Romke, hearing just God's faithfulness through her life, but also how that's impacted this location and the nations ultimately. So Romke, thank you so much just for your availability and being here today. Yeah, I think just start off at the beginning, like 1973.
Well, of course, it started before 1973 when I went to England in 1970 to do something that was called the Missionary School of Medicine. I thought if you wanted to be a missionary, you needed to know something about medical things. So I went to this school in England, and I was lodging in a place called the Foreign Missions Club. And that was a place for missionaries and for students. And there were three people there from New Zealand who introduced Youth with a Mission to Europe. Youth with a Mission didn't exist. It started in the 60s, but in 1970, there was nothing in Europe. Oh, I loved Youth with a Mission from the beginning, because there was nothing in those days for youth to be involved in missions. And these people really whetted my appetite. And so I thought, well, we should really start Youth with a Mission in the Netherlands.
But how did that look then? Because you were at that mission school, and they were...
They just came and they went to churches to tell about young people who could get involved. We called it a summer of service, I think, at the time. And we had we worked with churches to do evangelism. And we just did a lot of sightseeing as well. It was a lot of really amazing relationship with these three people. None of them actually were Jeff. People always ask me, was Jeff one of the three? No, Jeff was not in the picture. Jeff is my husband now. Yeah. And I so loved these three people and what they were portraying. So I thought, well, we should get this in the Netherlands. And so that was, you mentioned 1973, and it was in March 1973 that we actually officially started the organization Youth with a Mission. But before that, we had already taken a team to Munich, to the Olympic Games there, where together with other organizations, we did evangelism in Munich.
Yeah, and how did you get to that point? Because I know reading in your book that you've written, and also I've seen some videos from YWAM back. I think the Love Revolution, those videos which share a bit more about Munich. But you went there with 50 young Dutch people.
Yes.
How did you collect this group? How did it start? It's so exciting.
Well, that was the time of the coffee bars. You know, Youth for Christ had grown quite big in Holland, and we would go to coffee bars. We invited ourselves, or others invited us, and we just began to share about Munich. And there were 50 people who came with us, and which was a surprise, because really nobody knew us at the time. But we had two advocates in Holland. One of them was Brother Andrew, and he encouraged people through his publications to go to Munich, because he said that the athletes that come to Munich, we can never go to their country, like Cuba or China or Russia, but they can come to Munich. So we should be very cunning and be there as well. So he encouraged people to come. And the other person who was really an advocate for Youth with a Mission from the beginning was Corrie ten Boom. And I used to work for her at the time. Oh, she loved Youth with a Mission. And so she also encouraged people to go. And there were some of her older friends who went with us to Munich. It weren't just young people that went, but some older people as well. One lady was in charge of hospitality there, for example. I think she must have been, I don't know how old she was. In those days, when you're 20, everybody over 40 looks absolutely ancient. So
yeah, I think it's still the same nowadays.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. So yeah. I don't know really. But there was a very mixed group of people. And the interesting thing was that years later, we went over all the people that had gone to Munich because it was a short-term outreach, and that's how YWAM started, short-term. But once you've done something short-term and it has really affected you, you want to continue to be involved. And of these 50 people that had gone to Munich, 30 were still involved in either a church ministry or they'd gone out as missionaries. So it had really done something to them. And that's why I've always been such a strong believer in short-term missions. But in those days, short-term missions, nobody did it. But now everybody does it, you know, even the very conservative mission organizations and churches, they do short-term missions.
Yeah, because you mentioned that at the beginning you went to the medicine school in England, and that was a little bit the picture of how missions could look in total. That
you had to either be a teacher or a pastor or a medical person. But young people, it just wasn't done. And actually, I never used anything I learned at this missionary school of medicine, but it was God's way to get me involved with Youth with a Mission. Yeah. I would have never met these people if I hadn't been in that place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so next to that, you have you have these champions next to you, basically, who are championing you on personally and encouraging you to just run with this.
Well, to go for it, you see. And we had seen what we could do in Munich. It was amazing because that was the Olympics where the Israeli athletes were killed. And when we started out, nobody was really interested in what we Christians were doing there. But then later, people really wanted to be encouraged that not everything was bad, but there were still good things happening. And the city of Munich let us pick flowers from the gardens and hand it out to people. We have some wonderful pictures of us marching on the street handing out flowers from the official Munich gardens. But we had seen what we could do. So then in 1973, we wanted to have something like what we had done in Munich in Amsterdam.
And how did that work? Because I know you today, so I think, you know, if you want something, I think you have that kind of courage to just go and go for it. But how was that as a younger lady? You're there with all these different missionaries. There's a certain perspective of what missions looks like. And then,
well, we had a lot of people who, you know, they kind of shook their head and they thought, well, what are these people going to do? And what we really needed that winter of 72-73 was housing for these people that would come during the summer. Well, you do not remember that, and most people don't remember it, but I remember it very well. That was the time that all these young people came traveling from Amsterdam to the rest of the world. Yeah. So Amsterdam was full of young people, and they slept in the Vondelpark, and they slept on the Dam Square, and there was no housing for us. And that's another wonderful story, how two men who had an organization which was called One Way, One Commission, and they later said that was the only thing they ever did. They found us the Ark, which was an old boat that had been used for housing skipper children.
Oh yeah.
That was like a school for them.
Yeah.
And so then in 1973, June 73, we could buy these two very old boats. But it was so exciting. I remember that we, of course, when I signed for it, together with Al Ekimov, you know that name.
Yeah.
And when we had signed our name, we ran outside and we just laughed. We thought, what have we done? We are the owners of two boats. And after we had signed, you know, these very distinguished gentlemen shook our hands and said, well, congratulations, you now own two boats. Could you pay next week? And I know it sounds really silly, but we hadn't really thought about that, you know, that we did have to pay for it. And that's another very amazing story, how we then found this man who lent us the money. He told us it was a lot of money. And we said, well, it's a big boat, you know. You always have an answer when you want to give an answer.
Yeah.
And so then he lent us the money for that, for the, you know, half of it we had to pay within a week.
Yeah.
And so we paid the organization of the skipper's children for that boat.
Wow.
And it was later we found out that this man was a bank director, which was another amazing thing, because he then helped us over the years to actually buy Heidebeek, pay for the Heathershof, and he became a real friend of ours. And we would go to him and say, oh, you know, we really want to do this or that. And he would say, child, what do you have in mind now again? But he would help us, and that's how we were able to expand the work so much.
And that's so beautiful to hear, because I think I was busy doing some homework for my school, then I'm doing the leadership training school, and I was looking in our finance department and seeing some of those old documents, and I thought, oh, these look quite similar, but you know what big faith you had to have to take those steps. But you know, how did that look? The spiritual journey next to it. I know that the spiritual and physical are just connected, but in terms of to buy a boat and to even consider that, like, how did that look? Those moments together, praying, or
How
did you prepare yourself for?
Well, you know, we just knew we needed housing for these young people that came. 200 would come, you see, and where would they go? So then, when we then found these two old boats, we thought, oh, this is wonderful. And it was, I think the people who helped us find those boats, they were scared, you know, to do it.
Yeah.
But I think we were too young to really see the consequences. And
kind of like a youthful naivety.
Yeah,
helped you through
and,
it.
Or? And yeah, I think so. And then to find all the people like this bank director who got excited with us, and people like Brother Andrew and Corrie ten Boom, yeah, who encouraged us to do it. So it wasn't that we were just doing silly things, so to speak, but there was encouragement from all the people who had more experience, yeah, than we did. And I remember that in one of the Christian magazines in Holland, somebody wrote and said, well, this is really quite nice that they are now in Amsterdam doing what they are doing, living on these old boats, eating terrible food, which we did. And now we must hope that it will not continue to be an American organization. And I thought to myself, even at the time reading it, you know, this person hasn't really understood it, because it's not an American organization. It really is an organization that God has planted here in Holland. And we, from the beginning, we gave it a Dutch name. And that's, I think, one of the thrills of my life, to see how it's developed. And so many thousands of Dutch people as well have really been involved.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, what to say? I mean, it's just a remarkable story.
It's a wonderful story, you know. But I think what really is the most amazing thing to me, because I know myself,
yeah,
you know, and you think, well, if it had depended upon me, nothing would have happened. But it was really, I believe now even more than then, that it was God's time, God's plan, and that, yeah, he was just looking for people who could get involved. And I think it was a great advantage to be a woman, because many of the men thought, you know, woman, what can she do? So I always asked everybody to help. And they all thought, oh, we helped this girl, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So that was very good.
Is that something more a reflection that you see that was very helpful? Or during the time you also thought, I can use this to help network, to draw people in?
Well, I knew that I wasn't a theologian, for one thing. I, you know, there were many things that I couldn't do, but I could ask people to help. Like, for example, when we needed legal advice, we had a wonderful notary here in Heerde, and we would say, Mr. Bock, could you please help us with this? And people were very willing and very prepared to help. And I think it was really because I was young,
yeah,
and a woman, that they thought, oh, we'll help her, you know. Yeah. Kind of, I never felt that put down by them, but really it was a good thing.
Yeah, and I think, like, I mean, I know you've often been with conferences about women in leadership and so, but how did that look to be a woman, a female leader back then? Because even now we, you know, when we hear the news and so, we still have things with the, you know, the gender pay gap or gender roles in the workplace and so, but you, of course, are the pioneer of why in the Netherlands, and to be a woman with that kind of role, how did that look then in society?
Well, I think one of the things was that Lauren always so encouraged women, you know, that he felt women were just as important for the mission.
That's Lauren Cunningham.
Lauren Cunningham, the founder of Youth with the Mission. Well, and he really founded it with his wife.
Yeah.
And so there was never any problem from YWAM's side. But, you know, sometimes I would go to these meetings and usually I was at the very beginning, you know, I'm now talking about the early 70s, I was together with one or two other women. We were the only women there.
Yeah.
And sometimes the men would kind of look a little bit down on us, but mostly they agreed that what we were doing was valuable. And so when in the 80s, the late 80s, the Iron Curtain fell and people came to Europe to not only work in Western Europe, but Eastern Europe, there was set up a network of people who would work together called Hope for Europe.
Yeah.
And in that Hope for Europe, there was a prayer network and a Muslim network and a children's network. And there was also a women in leadership network. And that appealed to me. Not that I was a speaker or anything, but I thought I can organize.
Yeah.
And so I got involved in helping to organize that network. I'm still involved in it. And in 3 weeks' time, we have our first internet conference.
Oh, wow.
Women in leadership net conference. So that's really exciting for me. And that is something I think I've always enjoyed doing. Try to do things that haven't been done before.
Yeah.
And I love young people. I think young people are so interesting because they come up with new ideas. And that's one of the things I learned from Corey, not to get stuck in your old familiar things, but to know that the times change, the gospel doesn't change, Jesus doesn't change, but the times change. So try to be effective in that way. And so that's why I loved the Hope for Europe Women in Leadership Network. They're amazing women.
Yeah.
And you know, they don't have it easy, particularly in Eastern Europe, where men are still the boss and women can't say much. And for them to hear that they can be important, that they are useful, I love doing that.
Yeah, and I was about to ask you, and I can imagine, like, having, you know, you worked with Corrie ten Boom for her, but also being championed by her.
Yes.
You get a whole lot of inspiration, I think. And you see a woman who has experienced a lot, you know, also hardships, but also dares to believe in a hopeful future. And I could only, kind of in my head, I tried to imagine what that would be like to be inspired by her. But then you also have this responsibility to pass it on. And, you know, it shouldn't just stop with yourself. But, you know, how can I inspire the next generation and the next generation and so forth? So I'm just wondering, how was that? Or how do you take those lessons that you've learned on and...
Well, I always like it when I can talk about it. That's for one thing to say, you know, Corrie really helped me. I was telling this morning to somebody, when I first worked for her, she got a lot of letters from Germany, very complicated letters, and I thought, I don't know what to write to these people. So I put them on a stack, and I thought, well, Corrie can answer those letters. And then I said, Tante Corrie, you know, we always called Corrie Tante, Aunt Corrie.
Yeah.
And she said, who do you think I'll ask about the answers to give? I said, well, you will pray and ask God the Father. And she said, well, we both have the same Father. Wouldn't he give you the same answer he gives to me? And I was just so amazed about her trust in me. And that's what I hope to do too, that I trust young people. I'm so proud of our young YWAMers. They do wonderful things. They do things that all the people can do and very often are afraid to do. Because I think when you're older, you can see more the consequences of things. And when you're young, you more see the possibilities. And that's why I love YWAM and why I'm still a YWAMer, although I'm old now.
Well, I know definitely definitely, you champion so many of us, and I think you're always available and to come over to your house and have a cup of coffee or something and be inspired again. But how do you do that? I mean, how do you keep, you know, I did my DTS here in 2003 and I still see the same passion today and the same willingness to release young people and to speak into their lives as back then. And I can only imagine that that was there always. It's just a part of your character. But how do you do that as a mission that's constantly moving and different people to have that, I don't know, faith, the boldness to say, go run?
I'm not sure, Carl, how to answer that question. I think, having had an example of people like Corey and Brother Andrew and other people who would be very passionate about something, that has really helped me, you know, that you don't need to think, well, now I turn 65 and it's over and done with, but that you think, no, I can still maybe not do what I've always done, but I can still really listen to God what the next thing is I should do. Like when a few years ago we felt that the Lord led us to go to Amsterdam, we were first very surprised, but it's been wonderful. And I think that's been so much also a leading thing in my life, that we have seen the blessing on following what we felt was right to do. We've made lots of mistakes, let me tell you that. We've done things that in retrospect you think, oh, how could we have done it? But on the other hand, you see the blessing on a lot of the things that we have done, like the move we made a few years ago and stepping out of leadership, like Jeff was the European director till he was 60, and then he felt, well, we are Youth with a Mission, so he handed that over. And I think that's another important thing, not to hold on to things that you think are yours, but to pass them on, because it's not our work, it's God's work. So I think that's been an easy thing to do. And then to see how people flourish when they get the opportunity to do what they like to do, and they do it so different. And I hear people sometimes say, oh yeah, but it isn't like it used to be. And I think, well, wonderful that it isn't like it used to be, because it shouldn't be like it used to be, because it's a new time and new people, they have new gifts, they have new ideas, and we should encourage that.
But I think when I hear you, that seems to go quite easily. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think for a lot of people who are perhaps listening to this podcast, letting go of something that you have developed or nurtured is more of a challenge. So how do you make that transition not only effective but also
in your heart, you mean?
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure how to answer that, but life, you know, it's like when you have children, you know, you put in them as much as you can, and then there comes a moment that you need to let go of them, and you mustn't meddle with them once you've released them.
Yeah.
And I feel that that is also with the work we are doing, not to meddle with it. Although I was for many years on the board of YWAM, and so I was still very much involved. But then there came a time that I felt, no, I need to just hand it over. And sometimes I hear some things, you know, they inform me about really important things that happen. But I feel the work is in good hands, you know, and that's such a reassuring thing. I feel the people who lead the work here, the board, the people, the leadership in Amsterdam, the leadership here, they're doing such a wonderful job. Of course they do it very different than we did it. It would be terrible if they did it the way we did it. But it's a real blessing to see what is happening. And another thing that has really encouraged me is when you hear from people after many years and they say, well, it really, really encouraged me. Some small thing that might have happened here, that somebody came, met somebody in the hallway and said, well, you should do this or should do that, and it changed their life. And you think, now what if we hadn't had Heidebeek? It wouldn't have happened. And so it also gives me great joy to see that some of the things we did in the past are still bearing fruit now.
Yeah.
And that also, I think, has made it very easy in a way to you know, hand it over, pass it on, not to hold on to it, because I know too many people who've done that, and it has been to their own detriment as well as to the organization or the church or whatever.
Yeah, I'm so thankful that you share that, but also model what you say, and just, I mean, you just have a tremendous amount of faith and trust in those who take on leadership afterwards. So I think that's really great. And you mentioned also like that you shouldn't do things now that you did that was done previously. And that made me think, like, of course, you have a lot of different stories about how YWAM was back in the day.
Mm.
And I'm wondering if maybe there's one way which you think, I mean, you have so many stories. So
but
one that kind of connects to this kind of part of that faith of what's going to come forward, but also would bring the contrast of how it all is now, because it was very different.
Oh, it really was. But, and you know, the whole country was organized differently, and the there is so much more bureaucracy now that you have to really, as an organization as big as Youth with a Mission, you have to do that. You know, when we bought the Ark, we didn't even ask the board, you know, we just went and did it. Wow. Just imagine doing that now. I mean, that would be
impossible, I think.
Impossible, you know. And when we when there was hardly any money in those early days of YWAM, we had never heard of budgets, you know. We just did what we had to do. Well, you can't possibly do that nowadays. So we live in a different time, so things need to be done differently, and that you still need the same amount of faith.
Yeah.
You know, when I see how you've made this big, huge building here, you know, that's been wonderful, but it's all been thought through how to do it financially and everything. And we couldn't have done that in those early days because, you know, we didn't know how to do it. So I think it's so good that you always have to pray for God to send you the right people. I think having worked in the finance department for so many years, and then our best bookkeepers would always go to some, you know, better place, and then you would think, now how is this ever going to be? And then new people would come, and that has been, I think, a special thing for this ministry, that new people would keep coming.
Yeah, I think that is that's definitely kind of the, how would I say that? That's definitely the blessing of YWAM. There can be in some parts of who we are, there's a high turnover, especially when we think about the training schools, like the discipleship training school or the Bible for Life or the other schools. But then you do have to have faith that whilst there is a high turnover, that God will provide the correct personnel for what you need, the correct co-workers.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. And also the people with the right gifting, the right capacity. That's what I love about the young people, that they can really pick things up. Yeah.
Yeah. Is that, because I think we have to close off now, I'm looking at Stephen. Is it like, in closing, is there like a line or two of hope that you have for not just the future of Youth for a Mission here in the Netherlands, but also for just for young people and young people to step up and to realize their place or to be emboldened to,
yeah,
to do that?
I'm very sorry for, you know, a lot of the young people during this corona time, because they've been so limited, you know, and I feel so sorry for them, and there has been no possibility for them to go to school or to mix with their friends.
Yeah.
And that's been really difficult. So I think it's been so good that you have continued with your programs here with all the limitations and everything. And I think what I would like to say for young people, you know, you have a whole life in front of you. And even if you might think you've lost some years, God can make up for that. And don't think that the lessons you've learned at this difficult time, you might really see how good they've been. Like when I think of Corrie, her time in the concentration camp, you know, you think it was a lost time, but it wasn't. She learned some lessons that she couldn't have learned any other way. And so I think that's what I would like to say to young people. Don't think it's these years, because it will be 2 years, won't it? It's almost, well, anyway, it's, yes, a long time.
Yeah.
That they wasted, but that you could learn new things and in the limitations that you have. And YWAM can provide some of the possibilities in the future as well. And the threshold for YWAM has always been low. Easy to come in, easy to get out. I like that.
Yeah.
Nobody has to stay here. You can come and you can go and do in the world to be a light in the world. And you can do that when you're young and you can do that when you're old. I speak a lot these days to older people. And I tell them, you know, don't think your life is over. Just imagine all the things that you can still do when you're old. And it's the same for the young people. Imagine you have a whole life in front of you and you can be that light to give light to other people, encouragement to other people.
That's so true. Thank you so much, Romke, for your time.
You're welcome.
Thank you for inspiring us. And I hope for you who are listening to this podcast that you're able to look back. Hey, there are some nuggets here that I can really take out and apply. And also that you also build up in faith as well. Yeah. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll catch you on another podcast. Okay. Bye-bye.